Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, June 19th. I'm Ray Graff. The time has come once again for us to welcome back Rich Guthrie to the program. He is here to respond to your burning questions and comments. Can't figure out what winged creature is buzzing around your yard? Well, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Or you may email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, always good to get in early when Rich is here. The early bird catches the worm, as they say. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie and the Boyds are here after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our bird show for the month today, and we welcome back Rich Guthrie to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He's a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll get to as many emails as we can. The number, and there are a few open lines left at the moment, 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back to the show.
Hello again.
Great to have you here. The birds are back in my back patio. We have an overhang.
Mm-hmm.
And then toward the back, where it adjoins to the house, I have some speakers up, some outdoor speakers. And last year, these little tiny birdies came and built a nest right at the nook between the house and the speakers and the overhang. And I think the same family came back.
Well, they usually do. I mean, it worked the last time. I'm going to make it work again. So congratulations. You've done a good job.
It's pretty cool. Now, these birds are very small. I forget what you identified them last year.
I'm going to say house finch.
Probably. They're very small.
We have.
Oh, yeah.
We can do a picture.
They're brownish. They have wings and beaks. I know that for sure.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
You're on the right track.
And
right?
They like to feed low. We watch them all day long. The I presume the mama and the papa. Yep, that looks like those birds.
A little red on top, and the female is kind of brown with streaks on it.
Yeah. And they feed, though, all the time. So the whole day is spent going to the nest, feeding the little ones, and then going back out. And
finding some more.
Coming back.
This is what they got to do.
It's their whole life.
I mean, the young have got to grow quickly and get out of the nest.
How long will they be in the nest?
Maybe a week. Depends on the species and the availability of food and the amount of competition in the nest itself, you know, siblings.
There seems to be several, based on what I could hear, several in the nest, and there's a lot of food. They come back and forth with bugs and what have you?
Well, the house finch is not native to this area. It's actually a bird from the southwest that was brought up to the northeast illegally many years ago.
I didn't do it.
No.
Okay.
Someplace down on Long Island, uh-huh. The story is. Anyway, they're here, and they're doing quite well. They adapted quite well, and the name is very appropriate. They live near houses. They like ornamental shrubs. They'll nest in the flower pot on the porch or the Christmas ornament that you forgot to take down. They're there.
Well, it's fun, and it's fun to listen to the little ones. We haven't seen them pop out yet, but I guess any time now.
Well, good luck with that.
Rich Guthrie is our guest here on The Bird Show, and the number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. We'll start out with Margaret in New Paltz. Margaret, you're on.
Hello. I saw the strangest bird. On the weekend, I was up in Tilson, the village north of New Paltz, and I saw a large bird. I would say the body as big as a heron. The leg, it seemed to be a water bird. The legs were not as long as a heron's, but long.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed narrow but webby feet and a long neck and a sooty black color.
Okay.
And a long, skinny bill with a distinct spoon on the end.
Right, yeah.
You know this bird.
I'm going to say it's a cormorant.
Cormorant.
Really? What's it doing in Tilson?
Looking for lunch.
They really live around here, huh?
Well, they do. They're more apt to be found down on the Hudson River or up on one of the larger lakes in the area, the reservoirs. But the cormorants are a fish-eating bird. They're related to the pelican. And they have just recently started to colonize the Hudson River Valley.
How large are they?
They're quite large. They're as large as a heron, as Margaret points out. But they're all black or gray. The young ones have some white here and there on them, mainly on the belly.
Well, that's great.
Well, I've lived around here for 50, 70 years, and this is the first time I ever saw one. So wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Okay.
And so this is something new?
Well, not that new. I mean, they were here forever, but they didn't nest so much in the Hudson Valley. But within the last 30 years, they started building nests down there on the navigation stanchions on the river.
And they like freshwater, not saltwater?
Oh, no, they like saltwater, too.
So we could see them near the ocean?
Absolutely. You go down to Long Island, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Cape Cod, all the way up to Newfoundland.
Hmm. Rich Guthrie is our guest. Let's go to Mike in Saugerties. Mike, you're on. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
Mike. Hello, goodbye, Mike. Let's go over to Sarah in Fonda. Sarah, you're on.
Hi. I'm calling because we have a number of different bird nests, BBs and robins, in various places in our barn. And below the nest, there are lots of bird mites. That's Amazon Mary, I-T-E-S, mite.
Right.
And we, of course, they get on us. And so my question is it a bad thing that everything has fledged at the moment, but everybody's going to start with their second round of eggs, et cetera, soon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a bad thing to put diatomaceous earth? Do you know what that is?
Yes, I do.
In the nest?
And that's what I was going to suggest. It's a good thing. Mites are... usually not a big problem, but they can get out of control.
Mm-hmm.
No harm to humans or pets.
Okay.
They're strictly bird parasites.
All right.
And but they can be formidable in the nest itself, especially if the young are not well nourished.
Yeah.
So, yeah, diatomaceous earth, which is diatoms.
Yeah.
Right. And crunched up to... very, like, almost like talcum powder.
That's correct.
Like.
And it has some effect on the respiratory mechanism of the mites. So that is the recommended procedure.
And how much would you put in?
Oh, I don't know. I think a teaspoon or so, depending on the application, where it is, or it's in a nest
box. So a little research would be in order there.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Or
and
trial
it's a
and error.
Standard it's a standard organic pesticide.
That's correct. Yeah, harmless to all other forms.
All right, Sarah, thanks for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Now, we had Mike in Saugerties before, and then he wasn't ready to answer the call. Let's see if he's here now. Mike in Saugerties, are you there?
I'm here this time. Have you got me?
Yeah,
hey,
go ahead.
Hey, Mike.
Thank you. So the reason I called is I've got some questions about owls.
Mm-hmm.
I live in kind of a rural area, and we get mice in the fall that come into the house. Not a lot, but enough. So back a couple of months ago, I bought some owl nesting boxes from the local conservation office.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm about to hang them. But as I read about owls, I read that they sometimes prey on songbirds. And also, this year is the first year we've had some nesting bluebirds
mm-hmm.
that are just so pretty, and I don't want to jeopardize the bluebirds. I'll live with a couple of mice if it means putting up with if it's a trade-off of having my bluebirds.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's the story? Can you help me?
Yeah. Well, the answer is go ahead with the owls.
Really?
Yeah. Owl predation on songbirds is way low on the menu. I wouldn't worry about it. The songbirds can pretty well take care of themselves. The owls, being nocturnal, will look for night roosts where birds will congregate. And
there's
probably very little interaction between your bluebirds and the owls.
Good. Well, then another couple of questions about the owl. How far apart can I put two boxes? How big is their territory?
Well, it depends on the species. And I'm thinking that you're looking at screech owls or perhaps even...
I think so. I'm looking at the box now out my window. It's kind of like a big bluebird box.
Yes.
It was just around, 2 or 3 inch hole.
A
little, a slanted roof and a rectangle. That's about it.
Right. And that will work for screech owls. One little thing you might want to keep in mind is furnish it with a few pine needles inside on the floor of the owl nest box.
Okay. That's easy enough.
Yeah, or wood chips from the pine. Then the other thing is about distance apart. The normal neighborhood will be quite large, so you really don't want to set up a conflict between nesting competing pairs of screech owls. So I would say the normal yard, one only.
Okay, and that should be enough. Well, Mike, we have to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest today, 800-348-2551, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from State Street Fruit Store, Deli, Wines, and Spirits, downtown Northampton, a locally owned, community-minded grocery and specialty food store since 1922. Wine tastings every Friday, 4 to 7, statestreetfruit.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, quarriers and fabricators, used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, beers, wine, and cocktails. Live music every Friday, chestercommontable.com. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery, and labels to lawn signs, in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. And Windhorse Naturopathic Clinic, Brattleboro, Vermont, offering naturopathic medicine, oxidative medicine, colon hydrotherapy and acupuncture, specializing in Lyme disease, now accepting new primary care patients, windhorsenaturopathic.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. The number is 800-348-2551. The one, the only, Rich Guthrie is our guest today, and it's beautiful out there. Rich, I know there are many events going on.
Definitely. This is actually, it's kind of a slow period for the birding activity because birds are laying low right now. They're busy raising their families and getting the young out of the nest. But there are a few activities coming up I want to point out that folks can get out and enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
The local Hudson Mohawk Bird Club in the Capital District will be taking a trip on July 7th up to Warren County. This is a morning trip that will look at some of the high elevation, the colder climate type of birds that occur in our region. That's July 7th. You can go to hmbc.net for information on that. A little further east, the Hoffman Bird Club will be taking a trip to... top to bottom in Williamstown. That's on Sunday, the 24th of June.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Saturday, the 7th of July, Money Brook Trail over in Massachusetts. Check it out, hoffmanbirdclub.org. The Alan DeVoe Bird Club will be going to one of my favorite places, Omai Arts Center.
Oh, yeah.
In Ghent, New York. That's on the 23rd, Saturday. Alan DeVoe, birdclub.org, and then to Lake Taconic on June 30th. So June 23rd and June 30th, the Alan DeVoe Bird Club. The John Burroughs Natural History Society, open discovery at the Burroughs Sanctuary. That's on July 14th, 8 o'clock in the morning, jbnhs.org. That's down by Saugerties, New York.
All right.
Couple more.
Okay.
The Waterman Bird Club in Dutchess County, New York, will be going to Nellie Hill Preserve on June 20th. That'd be tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
That's at a morning trip. And then on the 23rd to Southlands Farm, watermanbirdclub.org. Brookline Bird Club will be going real further east in our listening area is the Quabbin Reservoir.
Oh, sure.
On July 7th. the brooklinebirdclub.org. They're a Boston-based group, but it's nice to welcome them into our listening area.
Why not?
They'll be sociable and hospitable.
We've got time. And anything going on in Rhode Island that you want to mention?
Wait. We got the Hampshire Bird Club.
Okay.
This is Hampshire, Massachusetts, over in Amherst.
All right.
We'll be going to Fort River Refuge on June 23rd.
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
That's
it. Lots of things. Yeah, go out there. Enjoy.
Rich Guthrie is our guest. Rich, this one came in via email, and then we'll jump back on the phones here. This one's from Kathleen. How can you ID a mockingbird just by listening? Is there anything distinctive about its call?
Yes, that its call is very inconsistent. The mockingbird lives up to its name. It imitates the songs of other birds, and it has this rambling repertoire that will consist of good, bad, and indifferent repetitions and imitations of other bird songs. How they recognize one another, you know, that's really not a phoebe. That's a nice mockingbird that's looking for company. Yeah, well, they get around it somehow.
But if Kathleen is on the back deck with a cocktail listening to birds, how can she tell it's one mockingbird and not 20 different birds?
There's a good way to tell. If it's loud and totally varied, it'll be the mockingbird. The mockingbird, once you start listening to it, they're so inconsistent with their consistency that they become recognizable.
All right, Rich Guthrie, I think I understand that response. Our guest is Rich Guthrie, and the phone line number is 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Canaan, Connecticut. Heather, you're on.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because my mother, who is petrified of birds, has a beautiful porch, patio thing with a roof, and robins keep building nests on the plank.
Mm-hmm.
We have tried, old CDs to distract them, and then some sort of, red sparkly foil, mm-hmm. but they keep building these nests, and she is refusing to go outside.
Oh, well.
So I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
Okay, here's a trick you might try. Get a rubber snake. There are
Come on.
Oh, seriously.
Really?
Yeah, birds are deathly afraid of
snakes. My
dad's
afraid of snakes.
Oh, my gosh. What about rubber snakes? Is your dad afraid of those?
Probably.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. Rubber snakes are harmless. And go for it.
Now, how would that fool any bird?
Snakes, if you're familiar with them, they'll lay there still until an opportunity to strike comes up.
Right.
And a bird doesn't want to take a chance to find out, is this thing for real? I mean, the plastic owl on top of the roof
does
not work.
No.
No, but a rubber snake is pretty, if you get a good one, they're pretty convincing.
And you can put them right where they keep building the nest?
Yeah, just sort of weave it in and out of the, make it look realistic. And aside from that.
And where does one buy a rubber snake?
I don't know, rubber snake store.
Rubber snakes are us. Well, Heather, do me a favor. If you try this, will you call us back and let us know if it works? I'm somewhat skeptical.
I will. I definitely will.
Cool. Yeah, good.
Thank you very much for the call, and good luck. 800-348-2551. You really?
Ah, sure.
All right, Rich, you're the expert. Let's go to Ken in Catskill. Ken, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was recently hiking out at, Sam's Point near Ellenville.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we hiked out to this Vanderkill Falls.
Okay.
And across the chasm from where we were sitting on the top of the cliff was a turkey vulture.
Okay.
And it was spreading its wings quite open for quite a while, and then a second turkey vulture showed up doing the same thing, and they kind of pranced around like that. And I was wondering what that was all about, if you know.
Well, vultures, turkey vultures and black vultures and several other kinds of birds will open their wings like that and hold them out. Spread eagle is the term. You see it on the back of the older 25
sure.
cent
yeah,
pieces.
Sure, exactly.
And there's a couple of reasons why they may do that. One thing is just to dry out, warm up.
Yeah.
And there's a special feature on the bird, on a vulture taxonomy, or physiology, that enables them to hook their wing onto a little latch. And holding it out like that is sort of like sitting in a chair and crossing your legs.
They hook their wings onto a little latch?
Yeah, in the bone structure. There's kind of like a lever in there.
And it just stays open?
And it holds it open without any effort.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. And so it could be a way of just relaxing the muscles for a little while. So there's and then also, but I don't know this for a fact, but I'm thinking that there may be some courtship behavior in there, that those two are dancing around, displaying in a, you know, like a peacock would do, but in vulture style.
Yeah.
Is there an easy way to distinguish male from female from that distance?
No. No. Vultures are identical in male and female. You can look at behavior. You could look at size, but for the most part, they're identical in and behavior is how they tell one apart.
Okay.
Right. All right. Thank you.
Hey, yes, thanks, Ken. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here to answer your questions. And we go to New Windsor, and Ross is on. Hello, Ross.
Yes. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Guthrie, do we have hummingbirds in the lower Hudson Valley? And assuming we do, do we just put out the old glass feeder filled with red ambrosia?
You can put out yes, we do have hummingbirds. The ruby-throated hummingbird lives in our region, the Hudson Valley, the Connecticut River Valley, Delaware River Valley. They're all the way up into the Adirondacks and White Mountains. Yes, you can put out a feeder and it will work very well, but here's the note. Don't use any kind of red coloration in there. Just plain sugar water. One part sugar, four parts water.
And why?
There's no need to indoctrinate this alien element, the red food coloring. It's probably not harmful.
Yeah.
But why take a chance? Okay. Why bother when they will come just as readily to plain and plain sugar water is okay for hummingbirds. It's a good source of energy. And I always prefer that if there were some wild flowers you can put out there, that would work better. That's always really preferred. But sugar water and a colorful hummingbird feeder will work.
The color attracts the birds?
It's just the color. And in fact, you can put almost red, almost anything bright red out there, and they'll come right up to it.
Okay.
And then check it out. So good luck with that.
Great.
Thanks, Ross. I believe we have seen hummingbirds already. Is it too early?
Oh, no, it's right on time.
Okay.
They've been here since about the first week or so of May.
Yeah.
And they're busy, busy, busy right now. The tiniest little nest, the dickens to try to find. It's just the size of a half dollar on a branch of a tree.
I think your phone's ringing, Rich. you want to take this call or should
we? No, we're good.
Okay, good.
I didn't even hear it.
All right, let's go back to the phones, the other phones, and yeah. Alex in Lawrenceburg. Alex, you're on.
I was hiking the Blue Ledges in the Adirondacks this past weekend, and at the end of the trail, you get to the Blue Ledges, you look up, you see this big pine tree at the top of the ledge. And at the top of the pine tree, there was this nest, and it was huge. It must have been, I don't know, 3-4 feet in diameter. It was just a really big nest, and I didn't see any eagles or anything. There was a loud raven, but I don't know. Is that a bald eagle nest, maybe?
Very likely, yeah. A huge nest on the top of a pine tree in the Adirondacks, very good likelihood. The other candidate would be an osprey. They also build a large stick nest at a conspicuous top of a tree, and usually closer to water than a bald eagle. Bald eagle, both of them prefer to build near water. So either one is a possibility.
Oh, okay. Cool. Thank you.
Yes,
thanks,
sir.
Thanks a lot for the call. How far up the tree will a... I mean, if it's a 3-foot nest, you really can't go up to the top of a pine tree.
Well, they do.
Really?
They do. Really precarious. Really precarious. Way up there on the top. And sometimes you wonder how that tree can manage to hold on to it. Sometimes they don't. Mm-hmm. But the eagle will come back year after year and rebuild a nest. The osprey will build lower. Doesn't necessarily have to be quite so high. But both of them prefer to build on the top of a prominent feature.
Will they build in dead trees?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting.
But...
What other birds build very high nests?
The great blue heron.
What birds around here, that not around water? Because I've seen some nests very high in my neighborhood, and I'm wondering, these can't be eagle nests.
Well, they could be. Eagles aren't necessarily totally wedded to water, but they do prefer to be near water because that's where the food source is.
Yeah.
But they can, in fact, build a slight distance away. The other possibility would be a hawk or a raven.
That must be something like that.
Yeah, and they're usually tucked away a little bit, more into the bole of the tree than on a conspicuous open top.
Rich Guthrie is our guest today on the Bird Edition of Vox Pop, and the number is 800-348-2551. Jenny in Poughkeepsie is next. Jenny.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm trying to turn the speakerphone off.
That's there a good plan, and you sound fine. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to try that rubber snake next year. I love birds, but I have a pair nesting above my back door, and we can't use the back door right now because we're afraid they're going to lose another egg. We think they are northern water thrushes.
Oh, not likely, but go ahead.
I've looked on all of the websites. The egg matches. The nest is an open nest of mostly moss.
Yeah.
We live by the Casperkill Creek, they sure look like them.
But not likely. The water thrush is, as the name suggests, right down there at the water's edge.
They're about 20 feet from the edge of the stream.
Okay. Well, I can't get a picture.
He is such a skeptic, okay. Jenny. I believe you 100%.
I almost
My question was, how long will it take after the first one appears to have hatched? Because we found the part of the shell.
I would say 10 days to 2 weeks, and they should be out of there.
Okay. I spent about 3 hours on the Audubon and the Cornell Ornithology website. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, can you get a picture and then send it to Rich? What's your email address, Rich?
The email is quite simple. It's my name with my middle initial, Richard P., as in Peter Guthrie, @gmail.com. Okay. So inquiries are welcome, that's for sure. Go ahead.
Okay, I will see.
All right, well, thanks a lot.
And check out the Waterman Bird Club down there in the Poughkeepsie area. They have a lot of experts, and they would be more than happy to know that there's a water thrush nesting in Dutchess County.
That's a very rare thing?
No, but it's hard to find because they are so reclusive and tucked away at the forest floor in the deep woods by the water.
They usually nest on the floor?
On the ground, yes. I don't think
that's what made you a little skeptical about this claim.
Yes.
And would it be completely unknown for them to do this?
What is unknown, I don't know. But I will say this. It's probably a house finch. It sounds more like a house finch, but the difference is in the bill. You can tell by the bill. If it's a thick, seed-eating bill, crunchy bill like a pair of heavy pliers versus a needle-nose pliers of an insect eater, which would be the water thrush.
Hmm.
So you can take a close look, and we'll see.
Are you saying the house swallows don't eat insects?
Oh, no. The house finch.
The house finch doesn't eat insects?
It does.
But
it's more adapted to eating seeds.
Interesting. All
crunching seeds open, but it will catch a bug. It will eat it just as quick.
Because the ones by my house seem to be coming back and forth with bugs all the time.
But this time of year, bugs are readily available, more so perhaps than some of the seeds that are just ripening. So, and we're assuming that's what you have, is a house
finch. That's a good point. Yeah. Let's go to Lila in Windsor, Massachusetts. You're on.
Hi. This is a question concerning a sandhill crane.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I've had one coming into my yard for a little over a month now.
Really?
And he eats the cracked corn I put out for the birds. And every day I pull in, he sees me, he spots me. And when I get out of my car, I say, "Hey, Jimmy," which is what I call him because of the cracked corn.
Right.
And he comes walking over to me. I'm just afraid that he won't leave when the time comes for him to migrate on to wherever he's supposed to be, because I know they're not real common to this area, although I was told by a bird club, a local bird club, that there is a pair they've been keeping an eye on that are nesting in a nearby town. And I don't know if they mean by a couple of years they've been around or what, but this one is the first time I've ever seen one in the area. And it's a young one. He's got the rusty-colored feathers. He stands almost up to my shoulder when he's standing up straight. Not that I'm terribly tall, but I'm just worried that he won't move on. I don't want him to get so nice to me, but he's so nice to me.
What do you think, Rich?
Well, absolutely. A sandhill crane, lucky you. I'm looking it up in a book. They're such an unusual bird.
A big, beautiful red patch on their forehead.
Isn't it brilliant?
The long black beak.
Well, the sandhill crane was unknown in this area not too long ago. And for some reason, they've started to colonize the northeast North America, up into Canada, Vermont, New York.
Yeah.
And I think... I'm not surprised that the local bird club is interested in this.
Now, what about...
Yeah, well, I did call them, and they came up and at the right time took a picture of him and noted him, a couple from one of the local clubs. So he's been noted, and that was back about the first week that I saw him, about a month ago.
Is there a danger, though, that this bird will become almost domesticated and stick around?
No, no.
That's what I'm afraid of.
No.
No, I don't have to worry?
No, it's a safe...
I don't have to stop feeding the birds?
It's a safe bet that it'll move on as when migration time comes.
That's a beautiful bird. Wow.
It is. It's a gorgeous bird.
Yeah.
It is. Now, when would that be? When do they migrate?
Well, the sandhill crane, we still don't know a lot about what their habits are in this area. They're so new to this area.
Okay.
But we do have a few that stay around even right through the winter. We'll go out into a cornfield or a hay field and feast on meadow voles or, as you say, crack corn. Enjoy the sandhill crane, and
don't worry about being too nice.
Doing the wrong thing.
No, I don't think you are. And they are. They are kind of, as a species, they are kind of friendly to people. I know down in Florida.
I'll walk right past them, and I'll turn around and follow me to where I'm going because I'm going to put some corn down.
What you want to do is look up the courtship dance of the sandhill crane.
Okay.
And join in.
Doing some dancing.
Join in.
All right, that's disturbing. Hey, we got to take a break here. Thank you very much
for
that. Don't be doing any courtship dances
with
birds.
Why not? It's great fun.
All right. We'll be back with Rich Dances with Birds Guthrie in a moment. 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop.
Support for WMC comes from Adirondack Aquatic Center, Malta, New York, a planned aquatic facility where children and adults with varying abilities in the region can learn, heal, play, exercise, train, and compete. AdirondackAquaticCenter.org. Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. Lakeview Orchard and Farm Stand, 94 Old Cheshire Road, Lanesboro, Massachusetts. Pre-picked or you-picked cherries, peaches, apples, berries, pies, pastries, donuts, Polish specialties including galumpki and pierogi. LakeviewOrchard.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts. For over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repairs, including tire pressure, exhaust, brakes, and checking engine lights, full-service gas station, CollegeStreetMotors.com. Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving clients throughout New England and New York with architecture designed for resilience and renewability, designed for the next 100 years. CNHArchitects.com. And Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, offering landscape design services including privacy hedges, perennial gardens, sod and lawn installation, pond and water features, and more. Whitney'sFarm.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by Rich Guthrie, and we talk birds on this program. The number is 800-348-2551, and Chris in Albany is next. Chris, you're on.
Hello. I'm glad I could get a chance to talk to you. This is not a joke.
Okay.
But when I pass every weekend, I pass the Coxsackie Correctional Facility, and many times I see a raptor in the field.
Okay.
And what's unusual, it hovers, flaps its wings. I think it's trying to scare out rodents or something.
Okay.
And this thing has stripes. And I'm wondering, is that a barred owl?
No. I'm pretty confident.
Does a barred owl come out in daylight?
They do, but they don't hunt actively during the daylight. They can be seen
perched. Okay, this thing's about 2.5 feet wingspan.
Right. I'm going to say that it's a red-tailed hawk out there. Red-tailed hawks will hover as they're watching some movement down below. It's probably a meadow vole or a field mouse that they're working on.
Yeah.
And they'll hover overhead, a helicopter overhead, and then when the moment is right, they'll strike.
Yeah.
And with luck, we'll come up with a meal, and if not, try again. So I'm familiar with the fields down there, and there are red-tailed hawks that nest in the area.
I've seen red-tailed. This one has a dark stripe and a light brown stripe, wings. Tail feathers.
It could be the young red-tailed hawk. If you're talking winter,
the young one, yeah.
Yeah, the young one. Wintertime, it could very well be the northern harrier, which come down in the winter and spend the winter in our area. Or the rough-legged hawk. So there are three choices. But if it's any time after April 1st, I would say that they're red-tailed hawks.
The other ones are out of town by then?
Yeah, they're gone back north. We'd like to see the northern harrier stay around. We have the Coxsackie Creek Grasslands Preserves, which we're hoping to have.
I think that's what it is. That's where the airplane gets its name, right, for the harrier?
Yes, it is. Right.
Yeah.
And what the harrier does is it courses back and forth, low over the field. It waits, again, for a mouse to make a mistake.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Chris.
Okay, good.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Have a good day. 800-348-2551 is the number. And let's go to Jill in Cheshire. Jill.
Hi, Rich. How are you?
Okay, fine. Thanks.
Good. I have a question. We're hosting a big party this weekend at our house.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to decide where to put the tent. It's 20 by 30 feet. On one side of the house, we have a nesting robin, we have barn swallows, tree swallows, and house wrens, and also bobolinks.
Wow.
And then on the other side of the house, we have nesting bluebirds, a pair of kestrels, and some house finches. Who's going to be the most bothered by the tent?
I'm going to say the bobolinks.
Yeah?
Because the bobolinks, a bobolink is a beautiful, beautiful bird that nests in the grasses on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones will nest in a tree side or someplace out of a field.
Mm-hmm.
But the bobolinks will be there in the field.
Well, the bobolinks are nesting in the field. We're putting the tent in our yard, which is right at the edge of the field.
Oh, well, then I wouldn't worry about... I'm going to cautiously say don't worry about any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your activity.
I just don't want to disturb. Everybody's got their nests all set up everywhere, and I don't want to.
Right.
I don't want to scare any of them away.
You probably won't. The birds have, once they have their nest set up, they're very tenacious.
Yeah.
And they can tolerate quite a bit of disturbance. And since yours is going to be a one-day wonder, a temporary event.
Yeah.
They may be discombobulated.
Well, this will be there for the weekend.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't worry about it too much.
All right.
I was afraid you were going to put the tent out there where the bobolinks are nesting.
No, we don't even cut the hay fields until after they're gone. So
very nice, Jill.
And also you were just talking about the northern harrier. We get one every winter.
Oh,
we always see the harrier.
Right. The harrier is like open fields like that. And congratulations. Yep. Thanks for that.
And have a great party, Jill.
Thank you for putting my mind at ease. I was worried about the birds.
Okay, Jill.
Thanks for the
wonderful
call. Jill just reminds me. Now, I spoke of the birds that have come back to our patio under the overhang, and they're sitting right in the corner by my outdoor speakers.
Mm-hmm.
I was grilling on Saturday. I was afraid to crank the Dean Martin on for annoying the birds.
Right.
Is that right to do, or can I put a little
good for you.
Little swing music
a little,
in there?
You know, a little, just don't overdo it with the volume.
Really?
Birds really don't mind noise much.
It annoys me that I can't play my Dean Martin and my Sinatra and stuff while I'm grilling.
Well, put your earphones on and...
No, Rich. Who's the top of the food chain here, Rich?
Well, the birds get preference because you love them.
Fine. All right, let's go to line 7. Charlie in New Paltz. Charlie, you're on.
Hey, how are you guys today?
All right.
Rich, what I wanted to tell you is that you know of that purple martin colony that lives at Exit 18 in New Paltz, don't you?
Yes, I certainly do.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that this year we've got almost 25 pair of nesting martins, and it's probably the biggest group of martins I've had here in the past 12 years.
Well,
and they're just starting to fledge out now.
Well,
or actually, eggs are hatching.
Charlie, thank you very much for that. I know you guys down there take good care of them, and I really want to give you a shout out for doing that, because that Martin colony is about the only one in this whole entire region.
Huh.
Outside of maybe one or two others.
Not Rich. Rich, there's one south of me.
Okay, I'm glad to hear about that.
We've been working together, and we've been watching, and they're almost directly due south. And it's really amazing watching the birds fly between the two places in the spring, setting everything up.
Well, excellent. Do me a favor. Send me an email to my email address, and I'd like to know more about that. We do have martin colonies. Purple martins are a type of swallow. Terrific insect eaters.
Are they really
eaters.
Purple?
They're really purple. They're a nice, deep, glossy purple.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're the most awesome birds in the world.
Huh. Well, good for you.
We've got a 35-year history written down of when we see the first scout and when they leave in August.
Oh, yeah. That's terrific.
You guys are doing a good job down there.
Mr. Paradis.
And your email is set up. Your email address once again, Rich?
Right, it's my name, Richard P. Guthrie, P as in Peter, G-U-T-H-R-I-E, @gmail.com. So I will say that we do have a colony up in Saratoga Lake, New York, mm-hmm. and there's quite a few of them up on Lake Champlain, up by Plattsburgh.
Yeah.
But in the Hudson Valley, scarce as hen's teeth.
Okay. Well, Charlie, thanks a lot for that. Very
really
interesting
good news.
Call.
I'm glad to hear that.
Let's go to Chris in Cornwall. Chris, you're on.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
My wife and I at our house have quite a number of feeders, and we've been tracking bird numbers and species for almost 30 years now here. And this year, we had a huge influx of cowbirds.
Mm-hmm.
We've been putting cracked corn on the ground for the ground feeders. And in past years, we've had one or two cowbirds that come and then they'd move on. But this year we had dozens, literally dozens of cowbirds. And when we stopped feeding the corn on the ground, they took up residence on the feeders themselves. And I wondered if this was an isolated eruption of cowbirds this year, or if you've heard more about this.
I have not. I know that there's around my way, there's a nominal few cowbirds around, but one or two or three or four may be maxed out. Any more than that, I think, is unusual in most situations. The cowbird is a bird that was native to the prairie states. It did not like to come east through the woods, the natural forest that was here before the colonists. So they are relatively new in the geologic sense in the Northeast. They are a parasite bird. They will not build a nest. They will lay their eggs in some other bird species' nest, which is a really fascinating phenomenon.
Yeah.
I mean, how to get around doing that, and at the detriment of the host species, the cowbird takes the lion's share of the food.
Yeah,
and I can't give you an explanation of why you have a sudden influx of cowbirds in your area. Normally, the population is rather stable. They'll move around in large groups during the winter months, but during the summer months, they're more or less spread out, evenly distributed.
Right. Yeah, and it was unusual for us because we'd have 12, 14, 16 of them on the ground here at one time, and then they would perch on the feeders and keep everybody else away. And
yeah, I understand.
It was very peculiar for us to see that many here.
Yeah, quite annoying.
Yeah.
I might say, check out ebird.org, and if you find a time, open up a free account there and enter your data, and especially the data that goes back several years in a historic perspective might be very interesting to keep an eye on.
Okay, will do.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. And you then presumably would vet that information before it goes live?
I do, for the Northeast New York, mm-hmm. from Warren County down to New York City.
And how many reports will you get a week?
Well, I don't see all of the reports. The only reports that I see, unless I go looking for them, are the ones that have a flagged entry, one that is unusual, that requires some sort of verification.
And who flags it?
It's automatic.
Really?
I set the limits, and so if a particular bird is rare in the area, I'll set a limit on that. And
interesting.
If it gets reported, I get to know about it, and then I will look at the details that are submitted, either photograph or sound recording or the written details, and I may, if necessary, contact the observer, for a little further verification. So we try to make sure that the science is good.
And how many reviewers for eBird are there around the country?
Oh, hundreds.
Really?
I do 18 counties in New York, and how many counties are there in the States? And Canada and Mexico and South America and Europe and Asia and Africa.
Terrific.
Yeah, eBird is a wonderful. Cornell University and the National Audubon Society are the folks behind eBird.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is our guest. And Jay in Huntington, Massachusetts. Jay, you're on.
Yes, hello. Two quick questions. First quick one. I've got a load of chipmunks that are out all day long, and I've never seen a hawk or owl, which I have a lot of around here, take one. Kind of always wondering why. Even the foxes seem to leave them alone. But my main question is, I've got an eastern phoebe pair that's been nesting under my 8-foot-high deck for at least 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like the same pair comes back every time, I guess. But this year they didn't come back. I have seen one phoebe hanging around the yard now and then, but that's it. And so it's a twofold question. How long do they live? And do the small baby birds ever come back to occupy those nests?
Okay, the first part is, most songbirds don't live long at all. 3 years is the average, and that includes the high rate of infant mortality. Once a bird reaches adulthood, it can live several years beyond that, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years. 10 is really extreme.
It's an old bird.
An old bird.
Yeah.
And the young birds will come back. So, and since they all look alike, it's really hard to tell who was here before and who's a newcomer and what have you.
Yeah.
So they do come back to the same nest site. If it's not occupied, they'll occupy it. If it is occupied, they'll move on and find another one. What happens is, there are three or four that might be out there that are potentially coming back to the same site, and something might have happened to them along the way. You know, the tragic news is that migration is really hazardous.
Yeah.
So many of them may not make it. And so you'll just, it's just a matter of time for one of the surplus ones from a nearby other nest to locate.
Thank you, Jay. That brings me to another question. You had mentioned to one of our callers about owl boxes and put some pine needles in, yada, yada, yada. How does an owl find it?
Oh, just random searching. I mean, they're out there really actively looking for a suitable nest site, and they'll reject a lot before they decide to pick one.
Interesting.
So it happens with bluebird boxes. You'll see the exploring, investigating, and move on, or exploring, investigating, or move in.
All right, let's quickly go over to Casey in Rexford. Hello, Casey, are you there?
Hi.
Yes, you're on.
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Hi. On earlier callers, you should be a bigger believer in the snakes.
Yeah.
Because all over Italy, where they eat outside often, and they trellis everything, they use the artificial snakes works like a charm.
Okay.
Secondly, on the hummingbirds, definitely never, ever, ever use those red sugar water things.
Thank you.
It's really, really bad for them. Really bad for them. And the reason why they use red is because hummingbirds have incredible color vision. They have to, because they have really bad hearing. And so they depend on their vision in order to mate and to find food.
All right.
And so that's why they color it red. They see red best.
Well, the red plastic on the hummingbird feeder should work just as well. In fact, better, because it's safe.
We only have about 30 seconds here, Casey. Do you have a question?
Do is to go get a good... Go get hummingbird mint. That works like a charm. It's easy to take care of.
Okay. We're running out of time here.
My question is, are there any birds which go after rabbits specifically?
Okay.
Sure. The red-tailed hawk and the great horned owl. Both of those are rabid eaters.
Rabid eaters.
Rabid.
We'll leave it on that. That's very nice. Rich Guthrie, thank you for being here, and I apologize to everybody who's left on the line.
My goodness, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a busy show, but it always is when Rich Guthrie is here.
Well, send them to richardpguthrie@gmail.com.
Once again, that email?
richardpguthrie@gmail.com. vox.com.
All right. And now I understand you'll be taking a couple of months off here. So this will be the last show for a while.
See you in September.
I'll see you in September. Well, Rich, thank you very much for being here. And we'll see you in September. Support comes from Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving the Berkshires, Pioneer Valley, and all of Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. Mass Match, for over 16 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service connecting singles through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond. MassMatch.com. Studio KTM Salon, Red Hook, specializing in all phases of cut and organic color, from corrective to fashion, by stylist Kristen Marquette. StudioKTM.com. And Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenAndPerrin.com. Thanks again to Rich Guthrie for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Once again, apologies to all those left on the line. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. I apologize for him as well. Thanks to Susie Chekai for answering the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we'll be exploring law enforcement and summer safety with Saratoga County Sheriff Michael Zerlo. Right now, stand by for news.